Last week, we had a really, really big cricket show. And on the back of that, the Proteas Under-19 Women's Team made it all the way to the final of the Under-19 Women's World Cup. As you would expect, they went on to completely fuck it from there, unfortunately, and followed the suit of all the other senior Proteas teams in the process. I mean, SA cricket internationally is a bit like Arsenal, really. So much hope, fuck all trophies. But hey, let's get into a sport where the words world champion and South African, they go hand to hand. Well, intermingle. They go well. Kind of like Man United and, oh shit, they lost again.
Don't know why we're in it. But anyway.
Those words work together, though. Of course, I'm talking about MMA. I'm talking about UFC. It's UFC 312 this weekend. Dricus du Plessis, the champion of the world in the middleweight division, is taking on a guy who thinks he should be in that position, stupidly. Sean Strickland is the second time they're going to be fighting, and we're going to unpack that all through the show today. For this, we have a fantastic guest. It's a guy that knows all about 312. He knows all about Dricus. He knows all about the UFC. It is a guy who is in the UFC and he's a team CIT teammate of Dricus. It is the one and only Cameron Simon. Yeah, there he is.
Thank you so much for having me. As you know, I didn't get a visa and that's why I'm sitting here right now.
Well, you are the best MMA guest in SA right now. Yeah. I probably should have used that line.
Shout out to you not getting a visa. I know. Yeah. We'll take that for
Cam, it's great to have you. I think this is, and no disrespect for former shows that we've had, but we've got topic and guest so equally matched here because you're a current UFC fighter, so you're going to have great insights for us. If you do hear some funny voices during the show today, we have Marv and Tian. They sit in the wings. Unfortunately, we don't have a camera for them. Just guys, just say hi.
How's it, guys?
How's it?
That's Tien.
That's Marvin.
Yeah, short son.
Okay, when are we getting all of this, huh? So we're going to get a bit more interaction from the crowds over here. These guys are a huge part of the show. And ultimately, Marv is here because he wants to see Sandile get choked out.
Yes, I was about to say, guys, Cameron, can you choke Sandile out today?
We'll see. There's a bet that's been put on.
Yeah.
A thousand rand, aid, right?
I just checked this all and we're going to see. 1,000 rand if I can last
seven seconds in a rear naked
choke. That's not why we're here. Ben forgot to introduce me. I can't believe it.
I was getting to it, but I was going to get into it with you getting choked.
At the end of the show.
Guys, as always, Sandile Shangaz is right here.
Shout out to you.
Right off the back of his team losing at the Soweto Derby, on the back of his team losing to Crystal Palace. You know, he's here for the support.
I'm here for it. What a absolutely shite weekend. But we're here. We're back. So really about how you bounce back from these type of situations. But it was an awesome weekend.
All right. This is often the emotional support couch that he's on. So yeah, look, we got to start off with the poll from last week. You know, every week on X, if you go onto TRN out on the bounce, it's always a mouthful, but it's there. We had a poll which was the Six Nations starts this weekend, of course, which was last weekend. Who are you backing for the title? Ireland were getting the most there. They got 50%. France, then England. After the weekend, Ireland had a sketchy-ish kind of win over England, and France absolutely hammered Wales. But just on this point, guys, can you please go and fucking vote on this thing? I mean, we go through the effort. I know X isn't the biggest, most engaged platform for social media for all of you out there, but let's get involved on the poll. Look, I still think that France are going to win.
That's crazy. Ben, everybody keeps on proving you wrong with these polls. You're being like a sports hipster about these calls. Of course, Ireland's going to win and three-peat. Come on,
I just think they're a more significantly better side. We need to get into the Clip Drip That's Gold moment from the week to prove my point. Mm. Okay, we're going to start out with France, first game, Six Nations. Hammered Warren Gatland's hapless team. Let's go with hapless. Other words in my mind, let's go with hapless.
Ben, this English that you'll be putting on this
43-0. 43-0. If you get beaten 43-0, you hope someone's going to give you a hug afterwards.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's my first That's Gold moment from the week. France were clinical, to use a Sandile word.
Shout out to my English.
Solid. Football. Huge weekend of football. Let's run through them quickly here. Cam, do you support football? Do you have a team? Do you like football?
I like football. I just don't have enough time to really follow it, to be honest.
You're not missing out on much.
Get the microphone a little bit closer there.
Oh, okay.
Just pull the arm.
Yeah, cool. I enjoy football. My stepbrothers, both of them played actually very well. So they're Portuguese as well. So obviously.
Are you Portuguese?
No, I'm not Portuguese. My step family is Portuguese.
You said as well. I thought she was. Yeah. See, that
so
one in the bio.
They come off the. They're born in off the island of Madeira, where Ronaldo is also born.
Turns 40 today, apparently.
So they absolutely worship him, like most people do. You know, so follow football, but not really, to be honest.
Shout out to you people. Protecting your heart. I really back you.
It's great because Sandile there was hoping that he would have another Man United
no,
fan.
No, I wasn't. And, I'm not throwing this around. You know, support yourself. You know, I need a support group for my issues. Do you want to talk about those That's Gold moments?
Yeah, we get back to the That's Gold moments for the week last week. Nottingham Forest, they got hammered by Bournemouth 5-0. They came back and they beat Brighton 7-0.
That was huge. Seven-piece in the Premier League is quite deep.
That's what good teams do, right? They score lots of goals. Mm. Arsenal 5, Man City 1.
I walked into that.
I absolutely loved that. I loved it in so many different ways. People were saying that Arsenal being so petty about telling Haaland to be humble and all these other things. And all I will say to that is, if this is how Arsenal finally grow some balls and actually get into it, be as petty as you want to be, guys. I mean, make it personal. Tune his dad, whatever you want to do. If that results in Arsenal scoring 5 goals,
I loved it.
For it.
I loved it. I loved Arsenal showing that dog in them, as we'd say, and just being a bit edgy, not being like, you know, male models and stuff like that. So shout out to Arsenal on that.
So edgy that even Havertz finished a goal.
Oh, brother Havertz, I owe you an apology for this week. That's all you get. Shout
Havertz
out
was great in that first half. He shat himself in front of goal. Yes. He then in-shanked it to Ødegaard, who scored. And then he had the open goal and he just missed it.
And he shanked it again. You take it. You take both sides.
Okay, the other big That's Gold moment from last week, of course, was the Soweto derby. Now, my colleague over here, he was there.
Yeah.
And he managed to provide us some really great footage, Wandy, if you want to bring it up there. So he went through, as you can see, with zero regard to our aspect ratio for the show, he provided us this. Which is
yo, guys,
awesome.
Yo, let's just move on. Shout out to my dad there, Styles P, and my boy Spisa. We went through to the stadium.
That was great. It was great seeing your dad. Obviously,
you can see you definitely did it for the gram.
Yes,
obviously.
I definitely
not for the
did.
Show.
I did it for the gram.
Well, it's nice to know where his priorities are. Yeah. Well, the points is out there, and I see your dad's pirate shirt was cleared in the wash. He wasn't sure.
He was like, oh my goodness, are we going to take it? First of all, great showcase of South African football. Sold out stadium. 80,000 people in the ground, but another 20,000 outside, which I don't know if it was a good or bad thing, but either way, it was super, super sold out. Great game of football. Even though we were cheated, I'm going to say it. It's not a penalty. You had advantage, and he missed. Therefore, it shouldn't be a penalty, but we will debate this online. But great showcase of SA football, so I loved it.
Can we just call them VAR Chiefs now? Drop the Kaiser, go straight to VAR Chiefs, because you guys need to be done dirty with the fact that we haven't got VAR.
Yo, Patrice, just bail us out. We just need the VAR. It's chump change for you. We need it, please. And you're going to regret it this weekend when you play against Pirates that you didn't have VAR. But anyway, I mean.
Okay, so there you have it. Chiefs will be leading the Betway Premiership if they had VAR. The final That's Gold moment for me last weekend was Nasruddin Imavov.
Get it right, get it tight.
I think I got that right, sort of. UFC fighter, of course, middleweight division, and he absolutely... Cam, how would you describe that knockout?
I was so confident, because I had some money on the fights as well. I was so confident.
For Israel?
On Israel. That's crazy. I was so confident. Before the fight, I was a bit stressed. I was like, you know, because there's a massive fact that Drickus absolutely breaks people. So after that first round, I'm like, no, my money is safe. And then, yeah, he just got tagged. Imavov is he has a weird style, but that finishing sequence was super explosive. That uppercut that followed after the straight, super hard on the button.
Yeah.
It was a great finish.
I don't think it was a bad stoppage. I think Goddard was within his rights to go, Israel, you're getting a bit cleaned here.
I think that's fair. Yeah, stoppage was fair. Does he get the title shot next? I highly doubt it.
Definitely.
No, of course not. I mean, it's preordained that Khamzat's going to get into that. Yeah. But these are all great things we're going to get into the second part of the show. Look, for me, I think that's gold moment has to be, I know, Marv, you agree with me here, Arsenal's 5-1 of a man.
That is absolutely...
Guys,
no.
It was unanimous.
No, come on.
When I spoke about it, everyone nodded at the same time.
No, come on. But you're not going to give it to Forrest in the 7?
No.
Okay, cool. Nice to know where your priorities lie. Non-biased opinion.
Sorry, Marv, you want to say something?
Football is a weird sport.
Marv, you're going to talk on the show. Marv, unfortunately, you sound like an oak in a trench coat in the school parking lot.
It's such a weirdo sport, guys. You guys get so emotionally invested in 11 men running around and chasing each other.
I actually had a question. Weirdos. Like, whose fans are worse? Fight fans or football fans? Because football fans.
Worse in what? Like, pettiness, just...
Yeah, I would say pettiness is a good one. I would say pettiness, pure rage and disappointment. All the negative emotions.
So I'm glad you bring this up, because I want to bring this up with you in the next segment. Yeah. I think fight fans, okay, Let's look at the worst of the worst. I think fight fans are the worst of the worst because you get these oaks basically calling out fires, going, "You're so shit! I can't believe you got knocked out!" All this kind of cuck.
It's like they could do
dude,
it,
dude. Your mother hits you every day because you still live at home and you're 40.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas,
like football fans at least appreciate a loss because it's quite competitive.
Yeah,
and they're invested in the team. But cheapest, the worst of the worst in fight fans is them.
Yeah, because they actually think they can go into the octagon or in a boxing ring and think they can do it. So
folks who've never played a contact sport, they've never so much had an argument with someone bigger than them, and they're going, "You shit, can't believe you got knocked out.
I'd beat you." No, yeah. Definitely fighting Flans. Flans.
It could choke hold.
Let's see. I will tap. Dude, trust me.
All right, guys. So that's the intro of the show. We've got so much to look forward to in the second part. Sandila's going to get choked out. We're going to go big into UFC 312. Marv's going to get so excited about the chokeout.
Pause, man. Jeez, let's go.
But before we get into the big segment with Cam, I caught up with him in the gym last week to see how he's getting along. Of course, he hasn't fought since March. But if you do know him and you do see him here, you see he's in fantastic shape. He really is looking great. And I mean that, Marv, in an athletic sense. Let's not get too carried away. So we're going to catch up with that. And then we get into the full segment of UFC 312 and how Cam's doing getting his comeback after this. All right. So engrossed. Okay, welcome back. So I first met Cam Simon over here back when he was 18, making his debut as MMA fighter. And it's like the running kind of joke back then was that he looks about 14. Now, Cam, baptism of fire, it's a tough sport that you're in. But now you are a bit of a veteran, like 6 years in now. I mean, like, just give us a snapshot about those last 6 years. I mean, getting into the sport, obviously, and how you've progressed through the ranks. Because it feels like a lifetime that I've known you, short period, and here you are at the age of 24.
Yeah, it's so weird. Even Uncle Joe Rogan, on the last UFC pay-per-view event, he said, "Yo, Cameron's a veteran." And I almost choked on my rusk. Yeah. I was like eating a rusk, having a coffee.
24 is young.
Hey, and I started laughing because I was like, "Yo, I'm 24. So being a veteran at 24, I guess, 11 fights. We fought a bunch of times in a very, very short time span. Mm. And got to learn quite a lot. But that's also kind of a big part of, not the downfall, but the stuff we need to start addressing is, you know, chasing, like I said in the video, like chasing that dragon, chasing the next fight. I quickly learned, like, I need to appreciate these wins, you know, which I didn't. After a fight, I was like, okay, cool. The stress is off me for a few days. And then I have to get my ass back in the gym and focus on the next one because, yeah.
But this is what I love about the sport, but at the same time, I really feel for you guys as athletes because everything in most other sports is quite gradual. Mm. You know, let's just use rugby because in the South African context, that's really big. You're really good in school. You'll play provincial age group kind of stuff. You'll get into a professional academy. You'll eke into like under 21 team. It's quite gradual how it goes. But like for you, everything happens. It's like, it's just on you. Mm. So the good times are good and it rockets you into that position. But then as soon as you hit some adversity, like it's really hard because again, it's just on you.
Yeah.
And for you, like you were so good in the EFC, you won the title in very little time, considering COVID sidelined you a few times.
Yeah.
Because there were less events.
Yeah, it took out 2 years basically.
And then it must have felt like your UFC career to this point has been a bit of a blur. Mm. Now you've had some time to actually stock take again. And the reason why I brought up the whole you're only 24 is that at the age of 24, not many people get to be very introspective in their careers. Yeah. But now you've had that. Yeah. What are the things that you've kind of taken out the most? Let's just call it the next 6 months, sort of mentally where you are. Because I know whenever someone loses or has a setback or whatever, it's hard not to think about stuff. Mm. Like, yep. What are the things that you've thought of it being like really good for you?
Good for me? Yeah. I must say,
I mean, I'm not going to dwell on the dickheads in the comments. We've already talked about like the bad fight fans.
Well, fuck those guys. But that's not going to help me at all. So I must say it's the flip of that coin. It's the people that I get to spend most of my days with. I spend about 4 to 5 hours a day only training. After that, there's recovery sessions, meal preps need to be done fresh, everything is revolved around training to the best of your ability, recovering, and doing that again the next day. So that being said, I can't do that alone. So I must say the biggest asset is the people around you. You need to rely on certain minds to really help with that. And, you know, I've learned a lot in this professional career and amateur career, but you still rely a lot on coaching. You rely on mental coaching. You rely on biokineticists, guys that have real in-depth knowledge about what to do, what to fix, what to change. So the last 6 months have been addressing a few things, being honest with ourselves. I think at CIT, we do that pretty well. I think Coach Mornay Fisser, he'll call you out, and he's not afraid to do that. He'll do that in front of the whole team, and we keep each other accountable. And it was really reflecting back on the two fights. You know, I remember after the Terrence Mitchell fight, I had a torn sternum. I had intercostals that were tearing apart. And we got the next offer for the fight, and we were just like, yeah, we'll fix this. This will fix. Yes, let's take it. And, you know, it's good and bad. You want to be able to be that guy that the UFC can rely on. Like, if they have someone
I almost feel like the UFC promotes that. Like, they glorify that kind of stuff. It's like, he's a little bit injured, but he's taking the fight. He's a warrior.
But, you know, in the last year, also not only focusing on my professional career, but also growing a business in Versus. Yeah. I understand that. I understand why you want to be able to call someone you have in mind for a matchup. And if they say yes, it makes things so much easier. So not blaming the UFC. It's 100% my responsibility really take stock and to decide, okay, I'm ready to go. This last year has been great because I got to fix a few things. And it's funny because at 21 years old, I won the EFC title. Now you're fighting. After the EFC title, you're fighting in the Contender Series 3 months after that. So you now need to recover from that, and I'll go try and win a contract. The moment you win that contract, then it's like, congratulations, you're now in a pool of killers. And there's a few things you need to fix really quickly. So I think we had unbelievable success in the first three fights. And with that also, I flew to America without having an opponent in my debut, just trusting that they'll get a late replacement. There's a bunch of stuff like that that the public doesn't even know of. And it's just keeping our heads down, trusting in the people around me, trusting in my training. And I must say the biggest takeaway is really focusing on that gut feeling. And it sounds so stupid and cliche, because if I hear someone else say that, I'll be like, yeah, whatever. But it's really trusting your intuition, knowing that your mind and your body is ready to take on a camp, because that's also, the fight is kind of easy, to be honest. Like, the fight is, it's the 8 to 12 weeks before that is absolutely,
well, especially at your gym,
it's torture. It's really torture. So it's really managing your body, managing training load. And that's something that we get to now over this year. I got to learn how to do that a lot better.
Just wanted to ask, in terms of adversity, especially in your sport, it's super intense. You know, the highs are super high. You know, we've seen just recently with the Israel fight that he was, you know, ordained as one of the greatest fighters, and then he loses a fight and people say he's finished. You know, how does that change, you know, your mindset and preparing for the next fight? Or how do you deal with that adversity and, you know, just yourself?
Really take it from who it's coming from. If it's just some troll on online that has never done anything, it's not going to bother me at all. Yeah. If it's someone like my coach being honest about stuff that we need to fix, then I'll have some time, think about what he says. But that adversity is going to come. And that's also the thing, you know, losing in front of millions of people, that sucks. That really sucks. But we're not, you're kind of used to losing. Like, I've been knocked out in training. I've been ragdolled. I've been used like a mop on the training floors. So the components of losing, you're used to it. I've been fighting since I was 12 years old. So I've had my ass kicked a fair share of times. It's just really the product of what you're putting out there. After my Christian Rodriguez fight, I said, like, this is not who I am, this is not who I want to be. And I was talking about the performance that I put up. And it's that expectation, I'm going to keep myself accountable for that. Same with the Peyton Talbot fight. You know, you have expectations. You go out there, you try your absolute best. Yeah. And I must say, every single time, win or lose, I go out there to try and finish a fight. Did I exceed my expectations? Not at all. Will I do with the next one? Most definitely.
Can I ask on the Izzy one?
Mm.
You know, you're a big fan. You said it already. Mm. Is he done? Do you feel like he's done?
It's hard. Izzy, there's also a massive part that you need to, like, he's done everything in the sports.
Yeah.
He's really done everything. And I'm a fan of his fighting. I'm a fan of what he has accomplished. If he has to decide today, like, I'm done, he's still one of the greatest. Just because he lost against Imavov in a fight where he's kind of at the back end of his career, it's not going to take away anything from his legacy. Well, especially not from the fighting community. Yeah. If you train, if you fight, even as an amateur, you'll understand, like, that it's part of the game. Mm-hmm. You are in there with killers. Imavov is now ranked number 5 in the world, mm-hmm. and he's there for a reason. Yeah. So it's really coming back to what he has achieved. He can be proud of that. His supporters can be proud of what he's done. Yeah. And let's be honest, like, fighting, it's so funny. We had this discussion. I had this discussion with Henny. It's one of my... Henny Engelbrecht is like a mental coach for me. He does our pads. He's kind of Bugs Bunny playing all the positions. And he made a joke and he just said, fighting will never love you as much as you love it. Yeah. And it's so true. And
I think like podcasting, really.
it's like, but I think that's any professional sport. You're going to get your ass kicked at some point, you know? So he can be so proud of what he has accomplished. And if he has to stop tomorrow, he's set. He's set. His family is set. He's built an amazing business out of a talent and a love for a martial art. So how can you not respect that?
Yeah, but, like, there's so many things. After Anderson Silva, he became the benchmark. He became the guy everyone wanted to beat. He became 100%. The guy that everyone raised the ability to.
Yeah.
I mean, if we are strictest right now, it'd be like Israel's greatness helped him get to where he was because he knew what he was aiming at.
100%.
And it's good to have the grudges and that kind of stuff. As long as he doesn't go to, like, full Tony Ferguson, his legacy is in touch. It's great.
100%. And there's always a passing of the mantle. In sports, it's just going
to
happen, you know.
Cam, it is the hardest in your sport, though. Hey, I've seen that. Again,
any fighting sport, you've seen guys hold on to the very end.
But it almost becomes like, it's like this, you become a sacrificial lamb to the next generation sometimes. I mean, I use Tony Ferguson again as an example. We'll even see it now, I think, with Michael Chandler. He hasn't won many fights recently, but he's still a guy people want to beat.
Of course,
he's taking on Paddy Pimblett next.
Yeah,
Your sport is just so hard,
yeah,
in so many different ways.
That's why, like a guy like Khabib, when he retired, it was picture perfect. He doesn't need the money. He's set for life. He has 6-7 generations of family members that will be okay. They will be looked after. And he had the perfect career. They were super smart on who they fought at what time. They were patient. They really kind of dragged out his career very strategically. So I think that's a massive part that the future generation should be looking at as well. And when he was at the top, he said, I don't need this. Obviously, his father, the passing of his father playing a massive role. But still, I must say, like, I think even if his father was around, I think at some point they would have said, like, we're done. We don't need this anymore.
I don't think he needed weight cuts anymore.
Yeah.
That guy making lightweight, I think, was a big push.
That's a bit. And at some point, you're like, okay, I'm done being hungry. Because we are constantly hungry. So I'm done doing that.
So, yeah, I mean, I want to touch on that because you are a bantamweight, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so what's your weigh-in weight when you look all emaciated, like today's been a bad day?
Yeah, so I weigh in at 135 pounds. So that's 61. You're
135? Damn.
So 61.3 kilos.
Wow.
Yeah. On the money.
So 60, you go down 61. I won't ask you all that other stuff, like, Because we all know it's a weight cut for a reason. Yeah. But as you get older, that becomes more and more difficult.
100%. Like, especially at the age where I am now. I'm still young, and I can tell, I've said it before, like I walk around at around 74 kilos, so it's about 13 kilos. And
that's the thing, like, you're very muscular for your frame, for your height as well.
You know what's the funny thing? Everyone says that until they watch the fights, and then they're like, yes, this guy is so small. This guy is so small compared to his opponents. So
it's always such a weird thing, because everyone's got a different sort of body.
Yeah.
What's the word? Meta? Build? No.
Build?
Yeah, okay, let's go with that. Everyone's got a different build because everyone's got different densities and all that kind of stuff. Like, if you look again, because we're going to talk about UFC 312, look at middleweights. Like, Drickus is densely set.
Yeah.
And then you get a guy like Israel who's skinny. He's like a lot more ectomorphic.
Yeah. We call it, it's
that's big.
It's
kind of what I was looking for.
Thickness. Yeah. Always joke and say Drickus is big, thicky, and little thicky.
But that's, you got similar structures with small proportions. Okay, so.
Why are you laughing there on the side?
Not that picky, Ben. Yeah,
okay. Enjoy that one, Mark. I don't know. See, bring him off humor.
I wanted to ask you a question just to go back a few steps on stuff that you discussed. Fans feel like when the fighters are picking who they fight, they're kind of ducking certain opponents. What's your opinion on that rhetoric? Do you think, like, fans have a point? I know it's hard for you to distinguish your position, but have you also felt as, like, you a fan of fighting? Somebody's been ducking somebody because they don't want to get their ass beat.
Just say John Jones.
I don't want to say it. I don't want to push it. But you know, John Jones is the big, segue on that.
100%. Yeah. That's a good example. Yeah. But again, he's very similar in a position where Izzy is. Does he need to fight again? No. He is the greatest of all time. Mm-hmm. And everyone keeps on giving Dana shit about that for generations. And we were talking about the passing of the mantle. They tried in that, in whatever division he was, they tried that and everyone failed. So it's like, give him his dues. Like, he's in a position where he gets to pick who he wants to fight. But on the other side of that, we've seen guys come in the UFC, they go on a 3-fight win streak, then the UFC offers them a fight and then they refuse the first one, they refuse another opponent, they refuse another option. And then the UFC is like, okay, well,
there were a lot of rumors that what happened with Don Madge.
I heard that's a rumor.
I mean, I'm not creating lies here. Just, that's a rumor around him, is that he did say no thank you to a couple of things.
But it has happened with different teams, different. So the UFC is set on doing the best fights, having the best fighters in the world, and having guys, like we said, that if you call them, listen, we have this opportunity. Are you ready? Will you take it? Yes or no? And, you have to really step up to the plate and be ready for that. And
but as an outside American fighter, do you feel like there's a bit of extra pressure though? Because, like, ultimately, you're outside looking in.
Yeah.
A lot of ways.
It's definitely, being outside of the United States, it's definitely harder in more ways than just that. You know, I think traveling is a massive thing. It's taking coaches and teammates. It's really building. It can be as small as just fitting your nutrition into the American lifestyle. Because I love coming back to South Africa every single time. After fights, next day, maybe we stay 2 days at most, then I want to come back home. I love camping out of here, but is it harder? Definitely. Well,
especially in those vital days before, because now your weight's an issue kind of thing.
Definitely.
Going into a plane is not good for anybody.
No, the plane, especially if you're going from South Africa, you're taking 16 and a half hours, you're going to Newark Airport, and then 5.5 hours to Vegas. It's not great for weight, especially if you have to lose a lot of it.
Please explain. What do you mean? What are you saying? Well, how does that deal with your weight?
While flying, you have a lot of water retention, which is not ideal for when you're cutting
weight. It's messing your sleep cycles up completely.
Sleep cycles.
Plain food's not exactly great.
Plain food is, and that's also the funny thing, because now you also, the mental battle of that is like you need to eat, because the moment you land, you're doing a training session, but what you're eating is trash. Yeah. So it's stuff like that really adds up for international guys. But you get to see some of the best talent come from right across the world, and these guys are game. They are, like, if there are opportunities, let's go, let's fly to the States, let's take on the Americans in their home soil, no problem.
Yeah. Cam, you know, we've started to see that branding as a fighter is becoming the big, big thing now, because Connor's an actor slash fighter. Can we call him can we call him that?
Connor's a guy who likes the smell of cocaine, let's be honest.
But we can't ignore how big the branding aspect is that in your guys' lives. Because once you get into a UFC, it's really not about the record anymore. It's about your marketability, who you are. Do you think that takes away from your fighting and having to build that aspect? Or is it as important as your training, as well building your brand?
Well, speaking on that, can we just pan back to Ben? I think he's in the coolest suits ever.
Oh, yo! Shout out!
Shout out!
This is me, just shout my out. Usual go-to bespoke in the hot seat here. I mean, it's an MMA show. You know, dress the part.
A massive shout out to Jason Denham and the go-to bespoke.
Jason actually fitted me for this suit here in the shadows there. And then, Tion walked in, my pants were down, and he's like, guys, I need to know. Seriously, true story.
Guys, this was the strangest thing, walking to studio and Ben in a suit, so... Tion
sounds solid. We should keep him if he's not saying anything. You know,
Tion sees some things around here.
No, I think that is a massive part as well. You know, but in professional sports, and you guys were touching on different sports, you got to see that in full swing as well, where Rory McIlroy was, you know, he was open about having all these obligations outside of the sport. And it is... It's a lot. It can get a lot, especially if you have brands that have expectations. You start businesses that have expectations. You have partners, you have family, you have everything. Focusing on the job at hand, it can get hard. And that's where I have the utmost respect for Drickus.
Yes.
Drickus, he is, it's unbelievable how the moment a fight is signed and his 8 or 10 week camp starts, he is, you can't find him, and it's good. It's not a bad thing. He is solely focused on being the best in the world. Yeah. And I think the best athletes in the world have the ability to switch or focus at the job at hand and really do that. But I think sports as a whole, that will always be something that is part of the job, and it's always something that you're going to have to deal with as it comes up because... you know, it's like I said, the sport takes a lot of time out of your day, and I think recovery is the biggest thing taken back from that.
Just on the naughty side of your diet, you know, you talked about fight camp and everything like that.
You said the naughty side. I'm
trying to use a funny word.
Yeah, that's.
What is the one binge thing that you've got to eat after so that intense?
Basically, what you're asking me is what naughty stuff do I want to put in my mouth after
no,
fight?
No, don't have to that say it like that.
That's what you said. That's basically
okay,
what you
what's
said.
Okay, what's the binge food, bro?
I must say, yo, that's a good one. I think that has changed a lot. Like, I really liked anything that was color beige and deep fried. That was the go-to. So it was pizza, it was burgers, pasta. But I must say, the thing that I enjoy probably the most is like an eggs Benedict with like a lot of hollandaise.
That sauce,
like if they can give me a bottle of hollandaise sauce, I'm waxed. Or anything at Henny's. Okay. Like Henny's, they have like a real, like a bubble house, but it's a massive burger, but I don't want it hot. I don't want to suffer while eating it. Yeah. Something like that.
Okay.
At fries.
All right.
Okay, we're going back to the deep fried stuff.
I'm always curious. Yeah.
But
yeah.
Also, it must become like a ritual thing with you. Your ritual is that you're smelling chemicals in the gym because the mats are getting cleaned every single day.
Yeah.
You constantly run other oaks or are sweating.
Yeah.
It's tough. So the other side of the spectrum is fried food, crunch textures,
yeah.
A little bit of oil in the mix here.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just going back to what you're saying about like all the different responsibilities and how Drickus is like this juggernaut with that. Mm. You know, one thing about sports fans, and it's nice for us to be able to share this with you because we're a lot more connected with that, is that sports fans, by doubting sports people, have this impression that they know more about them. Yeah. I mean, people ask me, you know, obviously in the run-up to this interview, people are saying like, you know, well, what do you think about Cam? You know, what are his chances going forward and stuff? And my answer is very natural because it's like professionalism that's in your team, that's been exhibited already with Drickus and obviously filters down. I mean, you're only 24. Mm-hmm. You're already exhibiting this from day one. The professionalism that you guys bring to the sport, I think, is really incredible. So your bounce back is always going to be so good. And I think this is something that Drickus doesn't get credit for in the sport at all.
Yeah.
You look at this week in general, okay? Sean Strickland, he is a fighter. Someone's put him on a plane to go and fight another oak, and he'll just talk shit and offer nothing. Drickus goes over there talking legacy. Drickus goes over there talking about certain steps for brilliance. Yeah. He's talking about those next steps. He's talking about why he's a champion. And he's been doing this before he even had the belt.
Yeah.
So it's such a cool thing to watch as you develop, because professionalism takes you further in sports. You'll see it with Ilia Topuria. Mm. That oak to me has a different air about him.
Yeah.
He fights against fighters, but he's a champion. Drickus too, different air about him the whole time. And that's another thing I like about your sport, is that you can actually see the guys that will progress quicker.
Yeah, definitely.
It's almost like having a broader understanding of what your role is.
Yeah, it's kind of like reading the back of The Art of War and actually reading The Art of War. It's everyone is doing it, kind of, but at different facets. And that's one thing. Ilia is a great example, because I think he's one of those guys. Drickus has that ability to... The fight is happening. He's fully focused on the fight, but it's more than just the fight. It's about building something, not only for yourself, for the people around you, for your country. And I think that's where, man, I love South African fans. I must say, like, even the guys tuning us on social media, like, get your ass back in the gym. It's like,
less I'm reading this while I actually physically read a grown man tell you less time on Instagram.
Yeah, less time on Instagram.
And you're measured with that stuff. You don't post a lot. Yeah. Your stuff's high quality and it's topical.
And the funny thing is, most of the time, I'm not even posting that myself. Like, I'm almost never on social media. But it's so funny to see that. But South African fans... It's a massive part of the cause of why we do this. Because it is hard. Like we mentioned, fighting, like training out of here, doing everything at our home base and going overseas and fighting, it's not easy. But there's a sense of, I'm proud of doing that. And it's so funny, I get to meet people and then they're so confused, because they firmly believe the gym, all the content we shoot, everything is overseas. And it's like, no, it's in Hatfield. Like, we have 500 members. It's a commercial gym. We have pro teams. The gym gets closed for those times. But the rest of the time, we are there. We are part of the team.
Oh, yeah.
So I think being closely connected to our community, to our fan base, to our country, I think that's something that you take into that fight as well. I still remember Drickus making his debut on Yas Island in Abu Dhabi. And we were standing backstage, and Henny gave me clear instruction. Before he walks out, you need to tell him the code words loosey-goosey. Okay? Just loosey-goosey. And I was like, but now I'm so stressed. He's warming up. I'm not exactly sure when he's walking out, but it sounded like it's so important that I tell him loosey-goosey. So... we're standing, they have like these holding curtains. So it's like black curtains at the back, black curtains at the front. It's just before you're supposed to walk out. And my walkout song starts playing in the arena for the handful of people there. And he turns around and he laughs at me. And I was like, yo, that's sick. That's cool. I can visualize a little bit being here someday. And I was like, Jukas, I need to tell you something. Loosey goosey. And he looked so confused. He was just like...
like, okay.
What? And he's like, yeah, sure. And he just started bouncing again, turning around and walking out. And we started walking out. He did the fight, obviously knocked out Marcus Perez. And after the fight, I was like, we had, because the fight was also at like 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
So morning mimosas, great. Listen, Drickus, I got clear instruction.
To say
loosey-goosey. And he's like, I don't fucking know what you're talking about. We didn't have a discussion. That's not. But that moment, just not taking things so seriously, coach telling him to remember to have fun. This is the biggest moment of your life. But remember, just to come down to earth almost, and be like, it's okay. Like, we're going out there. We're fighting another man in our underwear. It's fine. We're going to have fun. And that's one of the memories I'll cherish forever. And I that's also one of the one of the times I felt the dumbest ever. So,
well, yeah, I mean, Eddie must have loved that moment, just laughing, knowing what's going to happen.
Yeah, he's just like, what?
But this is the great thing about the sport. With great preparation, you actually have an ability to have a bit of fun.
Yeah.
Because as you said, it's 8 to 12 weeks. It's so hardcore. Mm. You might as well have fun in the moment, because why be more serious?
100%.
What's it going to do for you?
Yeah. You talk about your team, and I think as a sports fans, we always focus on the individual because it's such an individual sport. How important is your team around you, you know, to build one culture? Because as we talked about, Sean Strickland's team just seems like they say go out and fight, whereas Drickus is talking about legacy and building community. And even in your, you know, your videos as a prodigy, the big thing is mentorship. And
yeah.
How big is that culture and how it influences you?
Before we get to the team, I must also tell you guys that the Strickland that you see sometimes on camera, is it him? Yes. Yeah. But I've also met him in person.
Okay.
Like that he is...
Don't say he's a sweet guy.
His brain just works differently. He is doing it very different. He doesn't... There's just certain things in his life that he has zero disregard for. Yeah. But fighting is definitely one of the things that he cherishes. So going into this fight, and I think that's Strickus' approach to every single opponent. What you say there, you're making jokes, you're doing all these outrageous things. I know you are just playing the art of war. Mm-hmm. And it's coming back to solely focusing on the job at hand, and that's finishing Sean Strickland. So... That's one of the things that the public is like, yo, no, he's an idiot. He says this, that.
Well, I just want to give a shout out to my new favorite MMA channel, Shameless MMA.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He was saying with Sean Strickland.
Yeah, the crazy stuff on that
show. He's like someone trying to create this hardcore badass AI guy, but then they lost interest halfway through making him. So he blips,
yeah.
And he's not consistently hard.
Yeah.
Because he's so contradictory with himself.
Yeah, 100%. Well, that you get to see as well. You see that. And, you know, so I must say it's Drakus also has the amazing ability to – He sees you for what you really are, like what you say, what you do. He doesn't care about that. He knows, like, you're going to come for a 5-round war. And I do think that seeing some of the footage, seeing some of the interviews, they are looking to stretch out that fight as well. I don't think they're preparing for a finish. I don't think that's how they see beating Drickus. Mm-hmm. And you don't beat Drickus by finish. Like, you're going to – it's not going to happen. So they are like, how can we stretch this as far as possible? And Drickus knows that. And it's one of those things. But coming back to the team,
yeah,
we get to stand on the shoulders of giants. Like, we had just like the passing of the mantle in the sport, in the team. I still remember joining Team CIT at 14 years old, getting dropped off by a sponsor at the time because I didn't have transport to the gym. Getting dropped off.
Hang on a second here. I remember there was an interview a while back, and you mentioned the fact that you were fighting at 14, and I was like, isn't that a bit young?
Oh, yeah, that was so illegal.
There surely has to be some rules about this.
It's so funny because, at that stage, it was kind of in a hand. They were almost revising all the rules, so we just took it as a gap.
Yeah.
Because you weren't supposed to fight as an amateur in full contact until you're 18 years old. Tried before any other new rules came in, we just try and squeeze in as many fights as possible.
So you were in like grade 7 or whatever, and your fellow contemporaries were going for like high yard judo stuff.
Yeah.
And you were
flipping off.
You going fighting.
And we were, and so far, we fought once in a Greek church in Primrose. And they like they.
That's where legends are born. Huh?
that's either where concussions are bred or champions are bred.
Yeah,
you know, so it's. But I still remember signing Drickus. Yo, I don't know if he's gonna get in trouble for this, but
yeah, we'll work
someone
out the
someone signed a document. Okay, allegedly. Just signing, because it's my parents also gave their signature. They were like, because they didn't know any better. They were just like, they knew I was obsessed with the sport. They knew I wanted to fight. So, yeah, sure, you can fight. How violent is this? How big is this? I still remember my parents signing for me, or teammates or coaches had to sign for me to fight because I was still under under legal age to fight.
But like, who are you fighting though? Other revolutionary 14-year-olds? Or like
yeah, that
or
was
grown men. Yeah,
that
or
was
like fighting priests in the church.
That's also the funny, like right through, because they always say they need proof of like a passport or an ID. They never collected them. They said they need them, yeah. But we were just like, no, they'll forget, because hosting a show is absolutely chaotic. It is, and that's why I have so much respect for the UFC, yeah. Because they are a high performing events marketing giant, yeah. And they do it every single weekend. Yeah. It is. I still remember Jan and I with Versus after our first amateur event. Yeah. We didn't speak for like 2 weeks. Both of us were sick. We didn't want to do it. It's gut wrenching. Yeah. It's really hard. So I think they kind of forget about the passports and the ID checks, sure. In the chaos of running a show.
So you mentioned Versus there. Okay, so Versus is amateur MMA promotion. Yeah. It's yours, right?
Amateur and pro, yes.
Amateur and pro, okay. Yeah. Where's the time? Why did you want to start this? We already established your sport is already far too hands-on.
Yeah.
And now you got this on the side as well.
Yeah. I have an amazing business partner, Jan van den Berg, and he is really good at really running with that mantle. And we have an amazing team doing that. We started that in the heart of COVID, which was probably not the smartest idea, because we had zero fans at the first event. Well, at the first 2-3 events, we wanted to start a promotion where we wanted to give amateur athletes more of a showcase. We had production, we had live streaming. We wanted to do it more professionally, yeah. And we wanted to drive that forward, especially in South Africa, because everywhere else in the world, it's kind of advanced. Are we a bit behind on that aspect of the game? Most definitely. So it was trying to build a business and a brand that can support local fighters, yeah. And support them in getting fights, getting exposure, hopefully bring some sponsorships and eyeballs to amateur MMA as well. And I'm very happy to say that Versus Fight Night 11 happened on the 25th of January. We were 3,092 people at that event.
At live, and in person.
Live in person.
That's more than the Bulls game outside of like the big ones.
that's 3,092 people, and we had 21,000 people watching the live stream.
That's incredible. Great.
So
incredible.
The sport of MMA is alive and well, and credit again to Drekus. Like I get so many calls, because I also do the matchmaking for those events. I get so many calls from coaches telling me to thank Drekus, because he's winning fights and he has the championship and he carries himself the way he does. People's perception of the sports is changing, and it's a massive testament to his work, because now girls five years old is starting martial arts, starting jiu-jitsu. And so it's really cool to see.
Like, it's difficult to actually have an MMA conversation, not mention Drekus. I mean, like, I don't want to get carried away with that. We both know how great he is and what he's done for the sport.
Yeah.
But I want to keep it more on you here. Like, again, no disrespect to Drekus there.
Yeah, please.
We can continuously talk about Drekus. I don't mind at all.
Yeah. I just find that, again, you know, Sandita's question earlier about like the professionalism and how you market yourself as a brand, it's like what's kind of bubbling underneath here from your very much known attributes is that you're creating this stuff because you see this bigger picture. Mm-hmm. Now, Moor and Boer.
Yeah.
I always find it quite hard to say for some reason. Very simple words.
Now it's your turn. Try.
Moor and Boer.
Clip that. No. Clip that.
I got it. I got Clip it right. That. One take.
Clip that. One We're take. Posting that to Twitter.
When you ring announcer Sandita show. Yeah. Moor and Boer.
Yeah, congratulations. You're getting cancelled.
I'm getting cancelled on that one. Yeah.
Tell us the backstory of this, because as the name would suggest, these are farmers fighting each other.
Yeah. That's wild.
So.
Definitely get a ticket for that.
Out of Versus, Versus is doing very well, and that's the baby we're looking after. It's the little brother that we really want to grow, and we're doing exceptionally well. I think in terms of the local support of the communities, of their gyms, of their fighters, we are very happy with that. Last year, we floated this concept, and it was Jan and I just joking about like how can we do something for the Afrikaans community, because that was kind of the first thought process, was we wanted to do something like more Afrikaans. And then it kind of just steamrolled into this thing that was way bigger than we thought, because we started joking around. So just to give you some context as well, crazy. Jan,
I'm just going to make it very much known. This will be a slightly longer episode than usual today.
So it's Jan does commercial insurance, and he does a lot of agri insurance. So he's very well connected with the farmers. And then a bunch of farmers started watching Versus and saying, listen, I have beef with this farmer and this boerevereniging.
Got bigger millies than me.
This farmer union has beef with this farmer union, and they play rugby once a year, and they have like this rivalry. And then we were like, okay, there's something here. Like, there's definitely something that we can try, and you know, just maybe do something for them, and it doesn't have to be big. And then we started just tweaking this thing. I don't know how the concept of the show even starts.
It's a crazy show, though.
But the thought process was, we wanted to change the perception of fighting, especially in the Afrikaans community, being more conservative. It's like, ach nee man, this is brutal. Yeah. This is from the devil. Then it's like, no, it's not. There's so many things that I love about this sport, you know, and doing it from a young age and seeing what effect it had for me, my brother starting at a young age, Little Legends, the little kids starting the sport. So we built a 13 episode show where we take farmers, they have 6 months to prepare while still full-time farming. We team them up with coaches in their communities. Those gyms get exposure, the farmers get exposure, and then they fight each other. One night, that was 14 September of last year.
But you've managed to package all of this into a phenomenal YouTube show.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, as people work out, I'm an Engelser kind of oak. I watched these things flat out.
Yeah.
They were so brilliant. They were so captivating. Your production levels were good. Thank you. But not only that, it wasn't just like we've got like guys who can film stuff properly. It was so engaging. And you as a host, though.
Yeah.
Was it always the idea for you to be the host?
No, we didn't have money for anyone else.
I appreciate the come up.
If I'm being honest, no, it was kind of, so what happened was we did a deal with VO, which is the Afrikaans channel. So it was non-exclusive. So we got to post, they posted it first on their channel, and then 7 days later, we can post it to YouTube, because a lot of people don't have DSTV, or like farmers don't even have email addresses, you know, so it's super hard to really get it out into the community. But what followed was a following and support that we never could imagine. We had 4,500 people at the Hartveld Arena in Pretoria. We completely sold out. We had to refuse entry to some people. People were climbing fences at the opposite side of the entrance.
Sounds like Soweto Derby.
Yeah. We had 122,000 people watch the live stream.
Wow.
That's so
crazy. And this is season one, right? This is still you finding your feet with the show.
Yeah, this is season one. This is Murubur one. So we just got this amazing support. And you know, like the farmers unions, they are very competitive. They do like these rugby matches, and they have Boere sport days and stuff. So we wanted to do something for that community. We wanted to bring something positive out of it that can benefit the gyms, the athletes, the fight, everyone. And it exceeded our expectations. And we actually started filming season two last week, 2 weeks ago.
That's incredible.
But I mean, I again, ask a stupid question. Like, how do you make it bigger from there? Because these oaks are in quite remote places.
Yeah.
Not every farmer's got beef with some of the farmers.
Yeah.
It's quite hard. I mean, how do you, was there another selection process for the next round of fighters?
So it's so funny, because the season one selection process was everyone that said yes. So if we called you and we asked you and you said yes, congratulations, you're getting a fight.
But this was in the back of your partner's industry
100%. Insights. It was definitely some people he knew, like Farmer Koos, do you have someone or do you know someone that will fight?
Do you hate any? Yeah.
And everyone that said yes, great. Now it exploded to the extent where we had 200 and just over 200. So I think it was 210 farmers that applied. The rules were that you're not allowed to have any background experience. So then out of the 210, about 40 of them have had like amateur boxing fights and stuff like that. So obviously they're not included. So we were sitting with 171 farmer applications.
Wow.
And now the selection process has started in the back end.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And now do you have like a TV deal in place for this kind of stuff? When's it going to...
So we still, that's still open. That's we, I can't really share a lot about that. So it's...
I mean, can we bid for it on Real Network? Yeah. I reckon this just cuts the chaser.
We can do a deal.
So that is still open. There's a lot of stuff that we're not going to budge on. That's channels don't like, but we want to keep it pure. We want to keep it as a reality show. We don't want to interfere with the very important job that farmers obviously have. So there's a lot of red tape around that. We've had some proposals and offers and everything, and we had to turn it down because we're looking after our team and our farmers firstly. So
I reckon season 2 finale, Stutbull, in the crawl section where Oaks normally windsurfing, because it's like 4 tiers. It'd be like the Colosseum of Moerdenburg.
I promise you it's not big enough.
Ooh,
I know, but we're looking for massive, like, massive content here as well.
It's not big enough.
Can you imagine the atmosphere, though?
Yeah, it would be amazing. We are looking to change floor plans at the Hartveld to fit everyone because it's going to be a problem. But we are very excited for that show.
I think the whole Stutbull thing, Karin van Jaarsveld sings the national anthem, kick us off. What a day.
Someone really singing the national anthem, that's how we should start. You know,
start with Karin. She's often in your comments. Yeah. She's very supportive.
Yeah. I'll ask her. Anyway.
I'm part of this team, guys. I'm coming in here.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I'm taking a step back in terms of responsibility with that. Yeah. I have a big year that's waiting for me. So, but I'm still very much in versus in Moerdenburg, very active. And at the end of the day, it's fighting. Like, I love fighting, and it's more than just me, myself, and I. I like the community.
Beyonce quotable. You heard my boy.
Damn it.
Beyonce quotable.
We've
right
gone like 2 weeks without Beyonce, and you brought it back.
Sorry, who's Beyonce?
Yo, come on. Yeah. You're such a good player right now.
All right, guys, look, I know Sindile's got some more questions, but we need to get into the kind of weekend preview. I know you've been waiting for the whole UFC 312 analysis, and Cam's obviously going to bring the heat with that. Yeah. So we're going to take a little break, and we're going to come back with a full weekend, and it's going to be very much starting with UFC 312. I mean, I'm excited. The card might not be the best, but we'll get into Cam's thoughts on that too right after this.
Welcome back to On The Bounce, guys. It's a super exciting week of UFC. It's UFC 312. It is Sean Strickland versus Drickus. Myself and Ben are going to watch it at Benchwarmers. Please do join us at Benchwarmers.
Sunday morning.
And you've heard me ask it a million times. The card starts at 5, but we think the Drickus fight will be at 7 a.m. That is the last time, I promise you, I'll ask you that question.
So I'm pulling in at Benchwarmers to come and join you for this. I'm going to get there around 6-ish.
Yeah.
Because rule of thumb, Cam, back me up here. Rule of thumb is if it says main card starts at 5, especially when there's a co-main event, also a potential of 5 rounds, although Suarez won't last that long, 2 hours.
Do you know what's so funny about people asking about it?
Yeah.
You can Google UFC, right? And then Under the fight card, it gives you a fight card. It says main card starts at 5, right? So everyone asks me, what time is he fighting?
Every single time.
So I always, the people I like, rule of thumb is like, no, he's fighting 2 hours after that starting time. 7 o'clock, waxed.
You heard it.
People I don't like, no, just wake up at 3:30 just to make sure.
Just to get the preamble in. Because sometimes
sometimes they, like, UFC makes mistakes.
Yeah. No, they don't. Guys, that's cruel, because the first Drickus fight, I know thousands of people that woke up at 3 a.m. and I woke up at like 7:30. I'm like, okay, cool, Drickus is about to walk out. And they were like, guys, what's happening here?
It was quite rough for the first timers because, I mean, you've seen it, right? Yeah. Dricus was EFC champion. People didn't like the sport.
Yeah.
Suddenly he started winning in UFC. People started caring about the sport.
Yeah.
Then he becomes like title fight. Everyone's like, yeah, UFC is the best thing ever. I've known Dricus since like back in the day, Carnival City.
Yeah.
But the card that he became champion on was so shit. I remember Dana White saying, Canada, I owe you a rerun because that card was the most boring.
Yeah.
And everyone sat through 2 hours of this going, why is everyone like this?
Why is this sport? Because everyone that watches the sport is like, okay, no, this is boring. Okay, they're lying on top of each other. And then you get to that main event. And then it's just these two guys that don't want to go away, don't want to take a step back. And they're absolutely just trying to hit each other's heads off.
Yeah.
Him being on boring cards, I like it because it, he gets to showcase what fighting really is, and I think that just puts more spotlights on his performances, you know.
I guess how the guys make money when they become champions, Cam, again, like, just cutting when I'm trying to go overarching here, overreaching on my MMA knowledge, but you get pay-per-view points, so the more people watching pay-per-view, the more as a champion you get points of it.
Okay.
Now you look at this card on Saturday, you look through it again, there's 4 ranked fighters on the whole main card, of which they are the co and the main event.
Yeah.
2 of which are women's fighters. Shoot me if you want,
we're not going to get
they're
into
that. They're not the most exciting fights, guys. Weili Zhang is going to run through the Suarez chick because the skill set, the athleticism, the experience, she's a proper champion. She's my favorite women's fighter. I love watching her.
Yeah.
So, Cam, let's not gloss around the this card's good or bad, whatever it is. It's in Sydney. I've done some basic analysis here on my slides that you could then add on to. So just looking at these two straight up, obviously we've got Dricus. Obviously we know what he's like. He's 31. His UFC record is 8-0.
Yeah.
So he's had 8 fights, 0 losses. His height, slightly taller than Marv, 183 meters. His reach is 193. So Cam, how do they measure reach? Is it like you extend your arms out?
So it's middle, like your middle finger to middle finger wingspan, basically.
Okay.
Yeah, that's your reach.
So Dricus's reach is more than his height.
Yeah. Long arms.
Very long.
Yeah.
Juan, do you mind just going back onto that slide there so we can just go through it? Now, what does it mean when the guys are switch stance? He's like, he goes southpaw, he goes whatever, orthodox.
I was actually laughing when I saw switch stance there because not a lot of people would actually put that in. Which is kind of, that's very advanced of you.
Shut up, Ben.
Thanks, like, guys.
I think you gained a lot of respect in our community.
Yo, right? Shout out.
Ben has been waiting for this moment.
This is why I wore a suit, guys.
Life. This is why I wore a suit.
No, because everyone will always use the stance you started out with, to be honest. Like, if you write with your right hand, then you're orthodox. Like, if you write with your left hand, I'm left-handed, then you're a southpaw. Like, the way Dricus is, he fights from different stances. He's stepping over. He's throwing bombs. He's doing it. So switch stance is very accurate, you know. So
The reason I wanted to bring it up is because I think Sean Strickland can talk as much as he wants, but he's a certain ceiling to his certain abilities.
Yeah.
We know what he is. It's like Bulls rugby back in the day. Forward orientated, you're going to run straight and run over Oaks.
Yeah.
But Sean Strickland isn't the Bulls. He's not good enough. Wanda, if you get back on the slides there, you just carry on with that. Now we've got Sean Strickland over here, 2 years older, UFC record of 16-6. Now, those six being scattered around didn't start so great. He started as a welterweight, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then he had a car accident, a motorbike accident, whatever, and he realized that he needs to go up a little bit. Mm-hmm. Now, his reach is exactly the same as Dricker's. His stance is orthodox, so you know what you're getting with him.
Yeah.
And, you know, he is the betting underdog. If you guys, that would have been funny if Israel Adesanya was on this one.
Yeah.
So he will be the underdog going into this fight. Now, let's take our slides a little bit further here, Wendy. We can get more into the sort of meat of this. Dricus' last 5 fights, Cam, how would you sort of describe that? I mean, were there sort of trends or was it just like us understanding the evolution of Dricus and his skills?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind, and I briefly mentioned it in the start of the show, like after fighting Dricus, how many of those guys are broken.
Oh, very good point. Darren Till, gone. I don't know what he's doing. He's trying to be a boxer.
Yeah.
Derek Brunson, gone. Robert Whittaker,
broken mouth.
Especially after the comes-up fight. He's kind of gone.
And that's also like Robert Whittaker, amazing athlete. After that, didn't have the best performance.
No.
Dricus knows how to break people.
It's kind of like when the Proteas were the absolute best. They used to retire English cricket captains.
Yeah, Michael Vaughan, shout out.
Yeah, Michael Vaughan, take that again, 2 weeks in a row. Yeah, so there's Rickards' last five fights, pretty dominant. As you can see there, there's only one decision. Okay, the reason I want to bring that up is because Rickards does fight Oaks and he finishes them.
Yeah.
Whereas Strickland, on the other hand, if we look at the next slide there, out of his last five fights, there is four decisions.
Yeah.
He beats Sandile. You want to go the name there on the TKO?
Abus doesn't even count. Like, he wasn't even in the top 15, I think.
Yeah, so
Magomedov. Magomedov.
So his last, Abus Sapir and Magomedov, he was outside the top 15. Cam, a little bit of question Q&A here. Previously to that one, when did Strickland last have a TKO and who was it against? We got his last five fights.
I almost said something I wasn't supposed to, but...
His previous TKO as before the Abus Sapir fight?
That's a great question.
2020?
Oh, what year?
Yeah.
2020.
Brendan Allen.
Yeah.
That was the last time.
Take that, Brendan Allen.
That was the last time he had a TKO. So the point is here, is like he's going to a decision a lot of the time. I mean, as much as he's like bemoaning the fact that he didn't beat Rickards, he went to a decision.
Yeah.
He was dominant against Adesanya, but he still couldn't finish him in five rounds. Same with Paulo Costa. He's meant to be the better fighter. Took him five rounds, split decision.
And if you look at his record, you know, how many of those decisions were split decisions? Because I think that's also a massive point, something that Rickards also brought up in the week. And it's very true, because that's why I think Arap Niksic, his coach, is no slouch. Like, he understands martial arts. He understands the strategy of how judges score fights.
Yeah, super smart guy.
Super smart guy. But he also knows Sean. He knows his personality. The way you are as a person is the way you do everything. It's the way you're going to fight. So Sean likes really pulling that fight apart, making it lengthy, making it scrappy, making it tough. And he is tough. He is durable. He can take a punch. But he likes also just winning with 1 or 2 points. That's not how Rickards fights. Rickards wants to get you out of there. He wants to try and rip your head off. And I do think there's gonna come a point in this fight where Sean is gonna realize I'm falling behind. I need to break character. I need to break the chain of who I am and how I fight and how I do things. That's when he's going to get catched.
For cricket fans, it's a bit like the run rate's 14 and over and you're happy with the odd boundary and to rotate the strike. Yeah. That's kind of where it is with Sean Strickland.
Yeah.
Well, if you get those slides back up on our interactive tail of the tape here, where does Rickards win the fight? Well, I think it's pretty clear. He can win it on his feet, he can win it on the ground, and he can also just beat him in the press conference. This is something I want to ask him one day if I ever get to chat to him. Is there a game plan? Can you tell us? Want to just keep it on the other slide, please? Is there a game plan that Rickards takes in? Because this Oak is a champion on every single stage. He made two Oaks cry in the last two press conferences. This is no accident.
Yeah.
How much does he research this? He's
obsessed. In every facet of the sport, he's obsessed. Like, there's not once that you go to his house and on TV there's not a YouTube video open about either interview the guy did back in 2013 or a friend's mother's cousin that took a video footage of asking 3 or 4 questions. He knows his opponent very, very well. Do I think he plans the responses? No, I think that almost comes naturally in the moment, but it's based off of hours and hours of footage that he studies. He know the moment he gets in there and he's standing across the cage, he sees that guy. He's like, I know exactly who you are. I know exactly what to do to break you. It comes back to his love and obsession for the sport.
It's crazy because he's second language. Like, when I first met you, Oaks, he wasn't Englishing well.
No,
genuinely.
No, he was
so, okay, cornrows, and every third word was like, not too sure.
Yeah.
Their cornrows would kill it off.
They were pretty good. He should have gone back for the Adesanya fight.
It made him fast. And even before that, I think he, at some stage, if I remember correctly, he didn't want to do interviews in English. Like, they would ask in English, he'll reply in Afrikaans.
I mean, I didn't know that. I rocked up, it was with one of his sponsors. Yeah. So he had to humor me, but I was doing English interview. And I remember the first day at the yard with Scotty. Like, that's how I met him. I met him with a camera in hand, asking him questions. And he was like,
You're killing me, bro.
Go and find that video, the CM Trading Becoming a Champion thing. That first interview I did with him. Yeah.
Becoming a champion, exactly. He in every aspect of the game, he steps up to the plate. His preparation has been amazing for this camp. I think he's so used to, firstly, just looking at his record, I don't think people realize how many southpaws he has fought, you know, and preparing for, I think we last calculated out of the 20 fights, about 14 or 15 of them were southpaws. It's unheard of. But you get to train with a massive load of talent, all orthodox, mainly orthodox guys in the gym. So Strickland fighting that weird boxing stance, fighting that weird Philly shell, but being orthodox makes it a lot easier. A lot easier because now there's certain patterns he's going to recognize almost instantly. And with that killer instinct, he's going to come forward and he's going to make it really tough for Sean.
So just pull that slide back up there, Wandy, of Sean Strickland and how he could possibly win this fight. And it's quite clear, we kind of touched on it, maybe with the judges.
Maybe.
100%. Yeah, and that's,
solid
again,
analysis.
With his personality, his coaching staff, I think, and you can also see that in the interviews, how not only Sean speaks, but the people around him that was in his camp, they are prepared to go five rounds. And I don't think they see winning the title anywhere else.
Which is, again, everyone's got their strengths. But basically, you're saying, I've got plan A, and I've got plan A.
Yeah.
It's like watching Springbok rugby 15 years ago.
But I think that's, it's kind of like what is being fed to him is work towards the decision, but you're going to catch him somewhere. If that doesn't happen in round three, then emotionally, you're like, I'm not sure if this is going to happen. If this doesn't happen in round four, then it's like, okay, shit, now I'm in trouble. And that's why I think round three or four, I think something is going to happen. Either Sean is going to shoot, he's going to do something out of character, Driggers is going to capitalize.
Just be waiting because he's got all those skills.
He's going to capitalize on that.
Now, obviously, in Fight Week, there's lots of quotes that go around. People are going to say things. Strickland's going to say a lot of stuff. It's going to be incoherent. Wanda, if you just bring up some of those quote screens there, please. Now, Strickland, he will. This isn't ChatGPT. Sandile doesn't type this in. This is actually what he said. It's going to be a fucking war. He wants it. I want it. But I think I'm going to piece him apart. I was trying to find quotes that I could put onto one screen.
Yeah.
And it's like, I could have written this as a placeholder. I knew he was going to say this.
100%.
But just how he ends it. But I think I'm going to piece him apart. That's not a champion's talk.
I like how you separated like the thin text from the thick text, because like I think the thin text is Drakus. The war is Drakus. He's going to come forward and he's going to try and knock your head off. And then Sean is going to try and pick him apart, you know? So I think he's not lying, but that's very contradictory. And he hasn't said that only once. Like picking him apart, teaching him a lesson, outpointing him, taking him to school. It's a guy that wants to go to decision.
It's like these discrepancies are going, we're going to fight to the death. We're men. We're going to do all these kind of things, but I'm going to jab you. It's like, I'm going to absolutely murder the steak when I get home later. Side salad Greek, please. It just doesn't quite go. With Drickus, there's a lot of quotes around him this week. I mean, Drickus does give a good interview. This is a bit of an amalgamation here that I picked up. I didn't get lucky. I wasn't gifted a belt because people, and Strickland's entire narrative is that the judges did him dirty.
Yeah.
And Drickus pointed out that, you know, for 23 minutes of that 25 minute fight, he was going forward the whole time.
Yeah,
and that will always warrant a win. You know, people go on the fact like, oh, but there was more damage and stuff. Drickus got the damage because he was trying to actually make a fight out of it.
Yeah.
Demetrius Johnson, John Anik, these guys know fighting back to front. They all said, yes, it was tight.
Yeah.
Drickus was the winner.
Because
it's super interesting because judges also score very different. Or the scoring system stays the same, but the way they score is very different. So we've heard of judges seeing a scenario. So the guys go in, there's an exchange, and then they almost award a stripe to the person that they think won that exchange, right? So it's like stripe, stripe, stripe. And then they'll count up the stripes, and then it's a 10-9 for whoever had the most stripes. So that's the one way. How different how other judges score it is watching the whole fight. So watching the round, watching where the exchanges are being done, significant strikes, because the judges don't have access to significant strikes. They only get to see what's going on there. So that's why cage control, massively. It's a massive part of our sport. You have to have cage control. You look more dominant. You're going forward. You're putting your opponent on the back foot. And the way Drickers fight, he lands more on his front foot. So that's definitely a way. And also just the disparity in shots. With the last fight, you know, Sean Strickland had majority of his shots to the head. Now Drickers goes forward. He has cage control. But he's showing, I can strike him in the head. I can kick him in the body. I can kick his legs. I can take him down. I'm giving a bigger menu to my judges. Like, look at where I can beat him.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And if you look at it like that, then it's... When it went to the decision, I told my girlfriend, like, he's world champion. It's not even close. It wasn't close.
And that wasn't a headbutt as well.
No. As he keeps on trying to refer
He keeps trying to go for that. Yeah. Okay, so let's wrap up UFC 312 with the big question. If you're putting money down, what's your prediction?
If I'm putting money on it, Drickers by finish. If I have to be very specific, I'm gonna go fourth round. Submission. Tap. After Strickland shot for a takedown, not Drickers.
Oh, interesting. This is like playing UFC Cluedo. That's great. I'm more boisterous around this. Bullish, sorry. Different word.
Boisterous.
I reckon Strickland, all those things you said, but 10 minutes earlier, I think he's going to realize, because Drickus is going to sting him. Drickus is going to be laughing at him. He's going to be ticking him off. And I think Sean will push the pace. And I reckon second round submission for Drickus.
I like that.
I really do. I feel like this that. Because Drickers also knows, like, you're not really going to hurt me. He's never going to be like lackadaisical about it, but I think he can push the pace early, which he will. Sandile, what do you reckon?
Oh, definitely a knockout. I'm going out of the knockout, and we're not going five rounds. I think this narrative that Sean Strickland is somebody who's going to take it the full length of a fight, I think it comes to an end of this one. I think he goes for a knockout in four. I'm going to stick with four.
Cool.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah, Marv, I mean, I think we can wrap up UFC right there. What's your prediction?
I mean, Drickers is going to win for sure. But I want to see who gets choked out in here.
Right, we'll get to that.
Okay.
That's what I care about.
We've also got Michaela in the studio now. It's all happening. This is a great audience.
Yeah.
Now the funny thing, if you do watch the show and you follow us on social media, Michaela's from the South, but she doesn't like fighting.
Which is wild.
So the question is she really from the South?
Doubt it. She's from Athol, like me and Santa.
Guys, I mean, I've got to be honest with you. I'm so into UFC 312. Cam, it's been so great having you in the studio talking MMA. I can't do any other sport justice right now. Okay. Gareth Cliff Show on Friday. If you want a full sporting preview, I'm going to go all guns blazing. We got, obviously, the PSL, we've got the FA Cup, we've got a lone rugby championship, United Rugby Championship match, we've got the Six Nations, we've got the Wasted Management golf tournament. Let's recap all that. Gareth Cliff Show on Friday. Sandile, I think we should wrap it up.
First of all, Cam, shout out for being with us longer than usual. Great guest. So this is my fire round. I'm trying something new. You got 5 seconds to answer these questions. Cool. I'm just going to fire away. Knockout or submission?
Knockout.
Mm-hmm. Who hits harder?
Sorry.
Abur?
Hang on a second.
Wait, I've got the...
Knockout of submission, obviously, to giving here.
So I'm dishing it out.
Dishing it out.
Yeah, 100%. Well.
Submission or knockout?
No, knockout. Okay, by far. Cool. Every single time.
Who hits harder? Drickus or Abur? Because I had to change the question now.
Drickus.
Okay,
far.
Cool. One fighter you'd love to have a beer with?
George St. Pierre, but I don't think he drinks.
Anymore. You can have non-alcoholic.
Heineken Zeros.
Your celebrity crush. Now, come on. This is the real question.
My?
Celebrity crush.
Carly in front of your asphalt.
Ben, do you want to play with me?
Do you want to play? Sorry, that was my answer. Carry on.
A celebrity crush.
Shit. Don't get into trouble also, please.
Yes.
His girlfriend's kind of a celebrity like already. So,
yeah.
I
mean, you can always Rosie Jagger.
Okay, shout out.
A little fail-safe answer there.
Yeah.
You're stuck on an island with one UFC fighter. Who would it be?
100% Drickers, because we're surviving that shit. We're making it a party. We're having coconuts. We're having a good time.
And this one is for the homies. Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
No, never. And I remind my girlfriend of that every single time. It's. I think an Italian dies every single time we do it.
Your go-to karaoke song. I said me, myself, and I. I'm curious which one is yours.
What's that song?
Oof.
Or Pop Spinnacle.
No. Go to karaoke song. Yeah. Yes, I'm going to get butchered in the comments. I don't know.
Come on, man. One.
I'm trying. Yes, I'm drawing a blank. Like, bad.
Okay, I can circle back. We'll circle back to that. Who would you rather be trained by? Mr. Miyagi from The Karate Kid or Mickey from Rocky?
Mr. Miyagi.
Oh, shout out. Yeah. Wax on, wax off.
Yeah. And then that's this a great
one,
question.
And this one is probably very close to home because I know the cameras have zoomed in on you. Permanent cauliflower ear or nose that's crooked for life?
Cauliflowers. These are like my stars and stripes. They are not getting...
I'd also rather have cauliflower than a quacker.
Yeah, that's... And it's so funny when people make eye contact with you and then they look at your ears and they look back at you.
They're like...
And they always reference something about your ears. And yeah. I was like, what's wrong with my ears? Like, there's nothing wrong. And then their faces drop. They want to die. I'm like, no, it's just a joke.
Like, rule of thumb, don't pick a fight with Oak's, like, good ears like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because trust me, he knows how to fight.
I'm way too small to be a prop or a hooker. Yeah.
Yeah, and that is me and my lightning round. I will be doing this again every week and every episode. Ben, back to you, and let's close it off.
Look, we've got to finish off with a poll for this week. As you know, on X, TRN on the bounce. So harsh for me to say that. TRN on the bounce. Every single week we have a new poll. This week the poll is going to be a football one.
What do
you got there for us? Which team is finishing highest on the Premier League log? Is it going to be Man United? Is it going to be Spurs? Is it going to be West Ham? Is it going to be Everton? Those are your options this week, Sandile. Who's it going to be?
It's going to be Man United, and fuck you for asking this question.
All right, Cam, thanks so much for joining us. We're going to tag you obviously on our posts on social media. But Moerenburg, we're going to look out for that. Ever evolving versus promotions. Well done on what you're doing there, because I think you make the point is that we all know about UFC. People want to get involved. Mixed martial arts is fantastic. It's really healthy. It's not violent, unless maybe you're at the Greek Methodist Church and promotes.
That was hilarious. Yeah.
But it's a really good thing for kids to get into because you're learning discipline and you're exercising and you can defend yourself and do these really great things. Cam, it's been wonderful having you in the studio.
Thank you so much. It's been awesome. I can't wait to choke you guys out now afterwards. I didn't forget about that. Your check is going to bounce. And then, thank you so much for having me. And thank you for everyone for the support. We really appreciate it. It doesn't go unnoticed. We are sometimes terrible with replying to messages and comments and stuff like that, but we see a lot of it. So thanks for the love. Appreciate it.
If you do want to see Sandile get choked out, follow us on Instagram.
Guys, I'm not sure if I'm signing up for all this craziness.
Follow us on TikTok. Ben. Yeah, yeah. Sandile, we're using this to punch social media here. Just go with it.
I'm going to go with it. All right, fuck it. You'll catch the video just now.
I'll see it as a win if a vein pops.
No, what? That is us. That is episode 33 or 34 of On The Bounce. Cheers, guys.